Moin und herzlich willkommen bei Finance Forward. Ich bin John Stanley Hunter und mein heutiger Gast ist Vivid-Gründer Alexander Emischew. Mit seinem Fintech will er irgendwann 100 Millionen Kundinnen und Kunden in Europa erreichen. Wie will er da hinkommen? Außerdem verlässt das Fintech gerade seinen Partner Solaris, um auf eigenen Füßen zu stehen. Jetzt will der Gründer auch noch mit Marketing starten. Wie steht es also um die großen Pläne von Vivid? Das hört ihr jetzt. Viel Spaß. Hi Alex, welcome to Finance Forward podcast.
Hi John, thanks for having me.
It's been 4 years now that we've covered you guys with Vivid, that you we had our first article, I think it was like February 2020, and we somehow, my colleague Niklas spotted back then that there were a couple of guys from Tinkoff who were starting something mysterious in Germany or Western Europe. And over the course of that year, 2020, we reported on what you're going to do. And then in the summer, you launched, actually. And it looked back then fairly similar to N26, if I'm honest. It was very similar to what we knew as N26. I think to you, it looked more similar to what Tinkoff's at some point was a little bit. And now it's 4 years later. Let's talk about what was Vivid supposed to be when you started at the beginning, and what is it now, and what's the difference between those two? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Thanks, John, for inviting me. So, and yeah, obviously, it's been a while since we spoke last time, and you know, the first time when you mentioned Vivid. So, regionally, I think the biggest inspiration for Vivid was actually Rakuten. That's a, you know, the biggest company in Japan, where they really combine bank and a broker under one roof. Basically, you as a customer is able to basically simply invest into stocks and ETFs and build your wealth. And that was the general inspiration for us. You know, Japan was and it still is quite a similar economy as we see, you know, to Germany. So that's why we thought, okay, like if it works there, so we could do the same in Germany. And then out of Germany, we can conquer Europe. And that was basic idea from the very beginning. Obviously, like, you know, after 4 years, almost 4 years since it went live, you know, 2020, things has changed drastically. You know, first of all, the biggest change for the landscape is interest rate environment, because initially there was like, you know, zero interest rate or even negative interest rate environment. And now it's completely different. What does it mean? Meaning that when you can basically put your money and your money work for you without risk, you can do that. I mean, like, and you do that. That's the reason why basically if you look at some apps or some brokers who are, you know, providing investments, options trading, stocks trading, ETFs trading, they are on the rise, but not on the equity side, but rather on interest rate side. That's like the biggest change since that time. And second change was obviously the fact that basically we originally intended to be, you know, a large super app with many, many products, while like still having, you know, the financial services as a backbone for our, you know, services for customers. But we intend to offer much more services like, you know, shopping experience, like booking hotels, travels, etc. But as of now, it's not the case any longer. So we don't see a big advantage to have it in the app. It's still present there, but this is not the big part of our offering. So now the life is different.
Yes. When talking about super apps, I always wonder if the idea seems, on paper, it seems like a logical idea to have it all in one app. And in some countries, it does work. I think there are some good examples in China and Kazakhstan and in Russia, obviously, with Tinkoff for the last 20 years. Roughly. But I've always wondered, there hasn't really been a good case or a good example of it working in Western Europe. So maybe it's just something that customers over here don't want. Maybe people want to have the different services in different apps.
No, I mean, like it's just a different stage yet. So we haven't seen that yet, but we will see that. So what does it mean? Meaning that if you want to become a super app, you have to first build the core service, which you will provide to your customers. And this should be that popular, so you can really get 15-20% of population of your market. So imagine, like, you know, for Europe, there should be approximately 100 million customers who would really use the service on a daily basis or at least on a weekly basis. So once you have it, out of that, you can build, you know, the super app, because, like, you know, once you have your, you know, 20% of population of your market using your app or your service every day, or at least every week, you can sell them different other products. You know, you can, if you started, if your core service is financial service, whatever would it be, card or account or something else, you can start to sell them, you know, brokerage or crypto or buy now related products or e-commerce or anything else.
And people, and how do you know that people want that over here?
No, it's easy because, like, you know, it's pretty much the similar story across the world. So, like, I was a part of this Kaspi story. So you mentioned Kazakhstan. So now Kaspi is the biggest company in the country. I think, yeah, like 20 plus billion market capitalization on Nasdaq, I believe, right now. And if you look at Kaspi app, if you go to App Store, you would see that Kaspi is number one app and WhatsApp is number two, Instagram is number three. So basically, they are more popular than WhatsApp and Instagram. Well, when we started back then in 2007, it was really, really small bank. And it really started to explode only when we reach out to 25% of population. So when we reached this level, it started to explode because you already understand that you are in each and every family of a country. So, and then you can add additional services. So we started to add, you know, e-commerce, etc. So I left somewhere in the middle of this story, but I'm really proud of what was achieved by the team. So it's similar here. So, like, once you will have the app which you would use every day, I don't know what would that be. It may be Uber, it may be PayPal, or something like that. It may be Amazon, you know. So at a certain point in time, you can start cross-sell different services to the same customers.
When you say there's a market in Europe for 100 million customers and the critical mass that you need for Vivid to work as a super app would be 20-25%. Is that the goal, 20 million, 25 million customers?
Let me correct myself. So, like, the population of Europe, like, okay, besides UK, would be like slightly less than 500 million, meaning that 20% out of that would be 100 million. So this is kind of the critical mass. It's not only for Vivid, it's like for any company who has an ambition, to become a super app, you have to be there first. We don't target that now. We do not have this ambition right now. Yes, we have a dream to obviously become an app which is used by 100 million customers every day. That's our dream. But the separation between dreams and plans for us is that dreams is something that we think about, that what inspires us, but this is not something that we have in front of us for the next couple of years.
It's interesting that you say exactly that number, because 100 million customers is also what N26 founder Valentin Steif has proclaimed to have as his goal. I think he said that in 2016-17, they were after that number. And in the recent years, they had to pull out of a few markets. They tried to go to the US and Brazil and had to pull out of UK. And how now, internally realizing that the big customer number is not something that they can achieve. So the really interesting question is, I know you said it's not a goal for now, but I can see it in your eyes that it's a goal on the long term. What can you do better than N26 in that regard?
We are still much faster in product development. So you remember that back then, you know, when we started, you know, the biggest excitement of our customers came from the fact that we were like shipping products and new features and new value to them every week. So we basically started to deliver like two features a week somewhere end of 2020. What does it mean? Meaning that we constantly deliver the brand value for our customers. So we delivered the value and the message that you don't pay us if you're a standard customer. Okay, you pay us if you're Prime, but we will continue to deliver new value for you. So that's a great message for the brand. And That's what we did. And we still have this ability. So the only reason when we really kind of put on hold our product development, when we realized that it doesn't work for us, that's basically the moment in our history, you know, 1 year and a half ago, when we put on hold acquisition, when we started, okay, let's put it on hold first, finalize our infrastructure, when we can be really independent, when we can really build all products we want to have. And then after that, we will push on the accelerator again. That's basically what did happen last, you know, 1 year and a half. And now we are at the beginning of acceleration.
Mm. What's the total number of customers that you have at the moment?
Still the same. So like as we onboarded, okay, maybe slightly more, like because like we also welcomed some customers from Junpei, right? And like in total, like it should be more than six, maybe close to 700 customers, which we onboarded. But it's not interesting. As you remember, we always focused on active customers, which is slightly less than 200,000.
Because I noticed that 2 years ago when I asked for your number of customers and then recently for your number of customers, it was almost the same. That's not the growth story that that leads to 100 million customers, is it?
Exactly. That's why I said, like, for us, it was a bit difficult moment for in our history because we internally decided that we do not want to invest into acquiring new customers because we cannot build products which we like, which our customers will like as well, and we cannot continue to grow with the infrastructure we had. So that's why we intentionally decided, okay, let's put it on hold. We literally didn't invest a penny into marketing last 1 year and a half, finalizing all our licenses. As you remember, we have the now license in Luxembourg, we have a license in Netherlands, we also have some crypto registrations across Europe. And basically right now, we are in a position when we are completely independent, we basically onboard all customers for all our services ourselves. And that really helps us a lot. So we can finally deliver a service which we are proud of, meaning that I'm not, you know, disappointed when customers approach me, hey, Alex, why your account is blocked? Why my account is blocked? Or why did you guys, you know, block my money? Or, you know, where is like, you know, my fund, you know, funds transfer? So now I can either fix it immediately or I can really make it better so your account is never blocked.
Die Werbung.
Wir machen eine kurze Unterbrechung für unseren Werbepartner Kapital. Seit vielen Jahren zeigt das Wirtschaftsmagazin Kapital Entwicklungen aus der Wirtschafts- und Finanzwelt, begleitet den Wandel von Unternehmen, erkennt neue Trends und erklärt die großen Umbrüche der Weltwirtschaft. Neben Analysen und Tests gibt es unter anderem auch eine umfangreiche Auswahl an Ratgeberthemen. Sichert euch jetzt euer Plus an Wirtschaft und Finanzen. Mit dem Code OMR24 könnt ihr Kapital Plus 3 Monate lang für 99 Cent testen. Einfach auf www.kapital.de/OMR einlösen und alle umfangreichen Ratgeber zu Geldanlage, Vorsorge, Versicherung und Immobilien lesen. Außerdem erhaltet ihr Zugriff auf alle Kolumnen und Analysen der Kapitalexperten. Wir wünschen viel Spaß.
Werbung Ende.
So, yes, you just mentioned it without naming the name. For the past 4 years, you guys have been building under the infrastructure of Solaris in Berlin, which is a setup that you're now looking to leave. I think new customers already are onboarded on a new system.
Yeah.
That you guys are building, I think, on the infrastructure of Junpei. Is that right? Or what you bought there on the license of Junpei?
Thanks. To what they had, we basically had a great foundation, but we also built on top. So in fact, we combined, you know, Vivid infrastructure and Junpei's infrastructure and build on top some services. Like, you know, say B2B banking is completely new kit, both for Vivid and Junpei. So build on this new infrastructure.
And all the existing customers are still on Solaris until you are able to migrate them. I mean, we all know that migrating customers is not easily done.
That is actually started. So that is actually started, meaning that we have started to invite customers. So we do not do that in one like big announcement, because you can imagine that there will be quite a mess. So we started, you know, by several groups of customers to invite them to join in new Vivid, that we call like Vivid 2.0, where they have like some more benefits with cashbacks, with soon there will be a great product with interest rates and with unlimited CPA instant transfers and all that stuff. So like basically it started. I hope we're going to finish it within weeks, maybe a few months maximum. So all customers will have a new shiny Vivid.
All customers, you say. Now, that's interesting because you also said you're inviting them and you have to, or what you're doing is you're adding new features because you have to make sure that they want to switch. They can also just, it's an option for them at that time. They have to agree to it, otherwise that account closes. What's your experience with that so far? You said you started. How many, what percentage of customers don't migrate, but rather close their account at the moment?
If you look at current batches or groups of people that we invited already, it's going really, really well. So I would not be surprised if 95%+ of customers will stay with Vivid.
Okay,
because we clearly explain, you know, what is better. We try to make it as smooth as possible and really remove all obstacles on this way.
That's a surprisingly high number. Ambitious. And also, I think the customers that don't decide to stay, in my view, would also not be the most lucrative ones for you anyways, would they?
Sure. And important part, thanks, John, for mentioning this one. So what I didn't say, that's we cannot also invite all the customers, because there are some customers that are maybe not welcomed with a new platform. It's a very minimal number, maybe a few percent, but still, you know, like we have to do our own KYC and checks and everything. So like to make sure that we onboard only like proper customers.
So what you're saying is Solaris onboarded not proper customers, and now you're sorting out the dodgy ones.
I'm not saying that one. So like as soon as like we have our own responsibility here, it's very easy. So we have to do our own KYC and our own checks. And I cannot guarantee 100% of customers to pass onto a new platform. So what I'm saying is that I just do not know. So like for me, Solaris Bank onboarding is a black box. Which it was supposed to be, right? You know, so nothing bad here. So, and if for some reason we cannot onboard some customers, it's sad, disappointing, but that's the reality.
Now, when you, Solaris in the setup had has a full banking license. That's not something that you have without them. I think what you have is an e-money license. Is that right?
Few of them. So like we have e-money license, we have MiFID investment license, and we have several crypto registrations across Europe. Yeah.
When I got the press release that you are leaving Solaris, one thing that I noticed is that it is very, very creatively written around the word banking. It seems like you're not allowed to use the word banking anymore. You can use payment and other words, but not banking. Is that right?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for mentioning this one. So like, true, but it's not like only for us. It's like e-money company in Europe is allowed to do that. That's why like you basically name it account or, you know, money account, whatever you prefer, but not banking account. But that's the biggest difference. So like, you know, when we speak to customers, and there was my fear that there may be some kind of, you know, concerns from customer side. But as I just mentioned, you know, the early numbers are quite convincing, I must say. So early numbers of migration of customers are quite convincing.
Is that something that only fintech nerds like myself notice, or do you think your customers care about what license you have?
No, I think they do notice, but the trust to what we do and how we do that is just stronger. So if you look at like how do we treat customers when they are in trouble and when we really can support them, when it's not like outside of our responsibility, people really understand like that we are trying our best to make their like you know, life better. So in that sense, they understand that it's not a problem. So in fact, that's the biggest, I think, mystery in Europe. So that's the interesting part. I'm not sure how much are you familiar with the difference between like e-money safeguarding and bank safeguarding. So in fact, e-money safeguarding is much more secure than bank safeguarding of customer funds. So what does it mean? Meaning that if you're a bank, bank can use your funds, which you as a depositor brought to the bank, bank can use for whatever, like issuing credits, issuing like credit cards, credit lines, you know, and doing some other stuff. If you are an e-money company, e-money institution, you are not allowed to touch any penny out of these funds. What does it mean? That all money that you bring to us, we should put aside in a special safeguarding accounts go to some assets, money market funds, like, you know, like BlackRock and managed by, you know, separate custodians, meaning that we cannot even use your funds. In that sense, like, I would even say that e-money, to a certain extent, much more secure because you just don't have the right to take these funds, meaning that if, in an unfortunate case, we have to shut down operations with e-money, so all customer funds are completely secured, safeguarded, and they are not in a bankruptcy mass.
Does that include or compete with Einlagensicherung, so this deposit insurance, basically, that you have with the Vollbank Lizenz? Meaning, to our listeners, meaning that 100,000 euros of your assets are basically insured. No matter what happens to the institute, you get them back.
To a certain extent. And again, like my legal people will definitely hit me on the head. I feel myself that this is much more secure because like if you put a million, and honestly, I know like some customers of us that put literally this amount of money into Vivid. If you put this amount into Vivid, it's fully guaranteed, like 100% guaranteed because like we cannot touch this funds. It's not even with us. But yes, we cannot be part of a deposit guarantee scheme, unfortunately, and we cannot like put this label on the web page or, you know, mobile app screens. So that's the reason where I feel a bit disappointed that e-money is out of that. So if at a certain point in time, you know, e-money institutions would be allowed to be part of deposit guarantee schemes and, you know, contributing to that insurance, so to say, we would do that, despite the fact that, again, we cannot even use these funds.
In my feeling, we're coming out of a funding winter, basically, of a dark time for fintechs. And it seems like there's a little bit of positivity around it. One point that I can spot that with is marketing. So I can see a lot of ads for Scalable Capital at the moment. You see Trade Republic market there. New card and all these different fintechs are out there again, which made me realize when preparing for this podcast, I've never seen a Vivid ad. Are you not doing ads or are you just not targeting me?
Like for the last couple of years, as I said, like 1 year and a half, we haven't done any ad at all. So neither on Google or Facebook or any of Meta, you know, platform. But we're going to do that. So right now, like we have started already to roll out our marketing for a B2B service as soon as we want to push on the on accelerator on that. And obviously, like if you are, you know, game behind owner or, you know, you own a company of different other legal firm, you most probably would see that. And we, as always, like we try and test in different approaches. We try and test different channels and then see what works, what's not. So for us, it's always like start small, see where you have like good results. And if you're able to scale it up, just do that. So for some channels, we already scaling up. So soon you would see more and more advertising on B2B. B2C, we were quite successful without that. I mean, like we were doing some advertising back then, but mostly we were like growing by referrals, as you remember, all this, you know, cashback campaigns, etc.
How do you get your customers, if not through marketing? Is it all word of mouth, or how does Vivid grow?
Yeah, exactly like that. So, like, if you look at our B2C, which is still, you know, 99% of our customer base, right? For individuals, most of our customers came from either referrals or came from word of mouth organically. think paid acquisition was 25-30% of our customer base. So really not significant part of that. It depends obviously on the months when we were like doing some growth or not, but you know, generally if you look at our customer base, that's like that.
And who are your customers? Describe them to me. What kind of people are they?
Still Germany predominantly. 2/3 of customers are in Germany. If you look at private individuals, so these are customers with median age approximately 32, 33. They are obviously tech savvy because like they have to use their bank only via mobile app. That's what we allow right now. I would say that more and more of them are heavy users, meaning that they really use several, you know, products of Vivid. And they use like not only just money account, but also like, you know, investment accounts. They can use cashbacks. They can use crypto in some countries. So there are plenty of products which they use. And still, I think what if you look at what is the most popular thing about Vivid, still shared pockets, number one. Second, the pocket concept itself. So that we allow to get many, many accounts with German IBAN for free to a certain limit. And third, cashback. So these are still three main things why people decide to go for Vivid. If you look at B2B, I think the killer offer is our 4% interest. So like if you ask any B2B customer of ours, they would say, hey, we came because of 4% interest on it. It's like completely outrageous for Germany because like for private individuals, you can find it, but for business, it's just impossible to find such a high interest rate for Tagesgeldkonto, meaning, you know, daily money account where you can really have this instant liquidity.
How big is that B2B segment of yours?
Still very small because we have just started 2 months ago, 3 months ago, literally. So, but ramping up. So we are quite happy with results.
And who are those customers? I mean, not naming names, but maybe size and areas of where they're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, like geographically, obviously Germany, the biggest market for us, as always, because like that's a home market for Vivid. If you look at industries, so some part of them are startups. For them, that is obvious. You grab some funding, you know, I don't know, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, whatever, and then you put this funding onto our interest account and you can earn immediately out of that. So that allows them to extend their runway and, you know, so which is basically the great thing for startups. Regular companies like cafes, restaurants, the corner, so like nothing really super duper fancy fintech, but you know, something like that. Quite some number of IT companies, tech companies, not startups, but, you know, just established tech companies. I would say quite diverse, to be honest. So every day, like, we see some new sort of clients which we have in our, you know, customer base.
I would like to do an outlook with you on, where Vivid is headed. But before we do that, we have to talk about unhappy customers. There was this case you had, you started out offering, well, stocks or CFDs on stocks, basically, with a company called CM Equity. And then after a few years, you decided to switch the partner and move to Upvest, who offers real stock trading, as opposed to those derivatives that CM Equity does. And within that switch, what Vivid has done is given a deadline, basically, correct me if I'm wrong, given a deadline to its customers owning those stock derivatives and saying you have to sell them by that date and then you can buy them again through the Upvest setup, basically.
Not fully correct, but let me explain it a bit. So how did that work? So as I said, like we really worked quite hard last 1 year and a half on receiving our own licenses in each and every service that we provide to customers. One of these licenses was our Dutch BV company, which allows us to provide investment services ourselves. So in fact, the migration which you just mentioned was not from CM Equity to Upvest. Migration was done from CM Equity to ourselves, to Vivid Money BV. So we as Vivid Money, one of Vivid Money companies, one of companies of Vivid Money Group, we provide services for you as a customers if you trade stocks or ETFs. And we provide also custody services. And yes, we do have a partnership with Upvest, but Upvest is only a prime broker for us and not the only one. So like, in fact, the biggest volume goes through another prime broker. So if you look at the setup, it's slightly different from what you can see with other Upvest partners. So with us, we onboard customers ourselves, and we accept customer orders and then transmit it to execution broker. But Upvest, they do not touch customers directly. So they see us as a kind of big aggregator of orders. So they know that we onboard customers ourselves, but they don't onboard each and every customer. So that's the difference. When we did this migration, there were some failures, obviously. But what we managed to do is that we didn't push customers to sell and then buy stocks, because we basically found a legal structure, a legal construction, which allowed customers to transfer the underlying stock. Because like every time when you bought these derivatives, we had an underlying. So it was always like one-to-one hedged. So there were no leverage, no like unhedged positions, fully hedged. So, and we just transferred this underlying to our Dutch investment company. Unfortunately, there were customers who owned, say, precious metals, and we do not offer it under our Dutch setup. So for them, yes, unfortunately, we had to sell positions and get back to give back customers their cash. But there were around maybe 500 customers, so not really a big number. And for stocks, there were definitely some customers who were not willing to accept our offer. As I said, like, you know, you never get 100% of customers who are, you know, migrating to new setup. So for them, we also had to sell. And third group, maybe these are customers that you mentioned who were not happy. Some customers who we were not able to onboard because, like, I don't know, maybe they were onboarded in 2020 and then in 2022, the situation has changed, or 2023 situation has changed and we are not allowed to onboard them. So some different situations which happened, but generally, I think it was around like 90% of customers who basically transferred the shares without like this sell and buy transactions.
Couldn't you have just carried on the contract you had with CM Equity a little longer to give them, I think it was 3 months that they had or something like that. It was announced in spring and they had to sell by summer or something like that, if I remember correctly.
We prolonged it actually by additional 1 or 2 months. So in fact, like we announced it somewhere like in beginning of March, and initially we said, okay, it will be until end of May, but then it was end of June, but then end of July. So in fact, we try to warn customers really much in advance.
Now let's look at the future and look at where Vivid is headed. When we started this conversation today, we spoke about what you thought it was supposed to be when you started out in 2020. We talked a little bit about what it is now. Where do you see it heading at the moment? You said you are adding features and features. I mean, that has to stop. You can't have 3,000 different features in one app. I mean, at some point, it's just too many. Where is Vivid headed in this next decade?
So right now, if you look at, say months from now, so we definitely would go back to growth again. You know, as I said, like, you know, we have switched fully the licensing infrastructure and now we onboard customers ourselves. Very happy with the initial results, despite the fact we don't have any marketing money spent on it. We have an inflows of customers already increased. And we will push more on that end. If you look at where do we see ourselves in the next 3 to 5 months, we will continue to grow as a financial group, providing services across Europe. There will be still a combination of services, both for B2C and B2B part, but there will be more focused on the value which we can bring to B2B owners, B2B, I mean, like business owners, business directors, and employees of these companies, thanks to very powerful banking that we provided for private individuals. So the idea is that having this unique position where we really had a really powerful product for private individuals, we can bring this into the world of corporate banking. And if you look at that, you would see that right now, most of customers, when they have like business accounts and when they look at their private accounts, at least from what I see right now from different surveys and questionnaires, less than one half of them, they really have accounts under the same roof, meaning in the same financial institutions. Why do they do that? Because they are not happy with the service, either on personal or on the business side. What does it mean? That means for us, that's a great opportunity. We can really become a one-stop shop provider for all these people. By saying all these people, I mean really business owners, shareholders, directors, and employees of the companies. And we are all employees of some company if we are not business owners. So that's quite a huge number of customers that we are really targeting right now.
Die Werbung.
Wir machen eine kurze Unterbrechung für Werbung in eigener Sache und einen Reminder für die Bewerbungsphase der Finance Forward Masterclasses. Am 7. und 8. Mai findet in Hamburg zum dritten Mal die Finance Forward Konferenz statt. Neben viel Programm auf den Bühnen bekommt ihr außerdem an beiden Konferenztagen auch die Möglichkeit, an einer der Finance Forward Masterclasses teilzunehmen. Für einen der Plätze müsst ihr euch aber jetzt bewerben. Schaut dafür am besten so schnell wie möglich auf financefwd.com/masterclasses vorbei und bewerbt euch mit eurem Konferenzticket. Hier ein kleiner Auszug. Bei Adyen bekommt ihr 90 Minuten Deep Dive zum Thema Payment und wie Get Your Guide und Blue Tomato mit nahtlosem Zahlungsverkehr revolutionieren. Mastercard spricht über das wichtige Thema Gender Tech Gap und Felix 1 über Fallstricke in internationalem Onlinehandel.
Werbung Ende.
So, on that B2B segment, how big a part of Vivid will that be? Is that going to be? I mean, what you said earlier is if something works well, you scale it up. You try it small, and if it works well, you scale it up. If this were to explode now, would you be shutting down your B2C segment and just focus on that?
No, exactly because of the what I have just said. Like, we see a great value and the competitive advantage in the fact that we serve B2C customers really well, and we will continue to serve them. What does it mean? Meaning that, you know, if you look at right now at some B2B banks, you know, neobanks or traditional banks, they do serve businesses. But once it comes to, okay, kind of, can I have my personal account or can I have my personal overdraft or can I have my, you know, personal investment in the same app, in the same interface, or can I move money freely, instantly between like different accounts? It becomes a nightmare, if possible at all. So we really see this as an opportunity for Europe. And we have like a growing number of people who really have the side hustle, or they do this freelance job across Europe. So it's not only in Germany, but across all European countries. So we really think that this is a big opportunity, not only for us, but for all financial institutions.
How much money have you raised so far with Vivid?
I think in total it should be more than 200 million, like since the inception. But as of now, like we feel.
And how much is left?
As of now, like we feel good. So like we have money for the next couple of years. Again, it will highly depends on like how aggressive we are in pursuing our acquisition customer acquisition goals. So if we want to acquire customers more aggressively, we need to spend more money on that. So it's easy as that. If we see that really works, if we want to scale up more aggressively, if we can scale up more aggressively, okay, that will shorten our runway. But at the same time, that will really be a great proof for next investors, so we can basically attract them and show that this growth really justified to bring more money, fresh capital into company.
You've bought a few companies like JoomPay so far. This is a consolidating market, and it begs the question, what's Vivid's exit scenario? Is Vivid the player that would eventually buy more, or could Vivid merge with another similar fintech in Europe to reach that 100 million customer goal?
Never say never, obviously, but you know, like John, you know me personally, like, you know, I'm quite an ambitious person. So obviously we want to grow like to 100 million ourselves. But at the same time, I'm completely practical and realistic. So we will not reach out this number neither in 3 nor in 5 years. So it's rather like 10 years ahead.
That's going to be the headline, 100 million customers in 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. So like, how can we reach the target here? If for some reason, you know, the merge should be a good way to do that, okay, we should consider that one. But at the same time, we are very much proud of what we have built and, you know, the infrastructure we have right now across Europe, which not of many of our competitors really have. So we can really offer like all these different services under one roof, not only like money accounts, but also investments ourselves, not relying on some external counterparties, crypto as well, and other future services that will come out. So in that sense, like, I think we have all the power to develop ourselves.
Interesting. Well, thank you very much for those insights, Alex. We've reached the end, and we'll see, well, in 10 years, but I'm sure we'll speak before again if you reach your goals and how they shift until then. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, John. It was really nice talking to you again.
Dieser Podcast wird produziert von Podstars bei OMR.